Hey folks, welcome to Lords of Order, a DC's Dr. Fate fan podcast. I'm your host, Ed Moore, and I will be spoiling the book we're looking at. But first, if you want to get in touch, the website, bigtimenoise.com/Dr. Fate. The email address is thedrfatefanpodcast@gmail.com. On Facebook, Teal Productions, T-E-A-L, like the color, and Lords of Order are pages where I post the episodes. And on Twitter, Teal Productions is where you can find me. Now, I'm looking at All-Star Comics with the Super Squad, issue number 61. Cover dated July-August 1976. On sale, we're told, April 15th, 1976. This was scripted for us by Jerry Conway, penciled by Keith Giffen doing the layouts and Wally Wood finishing. Inks are by Wally Wood and Al Sirois. Colors, this time they tracked down, apparently, colors this issue were by Carl Gafford. Letters by Ben Oda. The cover of this issue was from Ernie Chua and Tatiana Wood. And this issue can be found, which I've been neglecting to tell you guys. Sorry about that. The Justice Society 2006 series, issue 1. Showcase presents All-Star Comics, number 1 from 2011. All-Star Comics Only Legends Live Forever from 2019. All of those are from DC Comics, of course. Right, so looking at the cover here, we have an image of, with lots of everywhere words, DC Comics salutes the Bicentennial, the line DC Superstars, just text all over the place. But the image, which actually, may I suggest that there was a little bit too much extraneous text on the cover. An image of Vulcan, who is being surrounded by, or restrained, I should say, by Green Lantern, flying in a flying JSA car, I would assume, which is open-topped. I don't think they have an open-top car in this story, but on the cover they do. And driving it is Dr. Midnight, first time in a little while, and Wildcat. Too late, Green Lantern. You caught Vulcan, but he killed Dr. Fate, Wildcat is saying. As we see that the extended axe of Vulcan has nimbused, if that can be a verb, Dr. Fate in a nimbus of fire, and he is plummeting to the ground. Have we got surprises for you in a tale titled Hellfire and Holocaust, we're told finally. First page of the story. The fire this time, it comes from the man-monster self-named Vulcan, formerly a NASA astronaut known as Christopher Pike, whose body has undergone a hideous transformation during an orbit of the sun, and whose mind has been twisted as well. Once Christopher Pike worshipped the Justice Society of America, but now he craves its destruction, a wish on the verge of fulfillment this evening as Vulcan battles against two of the JSA's most powerful members, Dr. Fate and Green Lantern, in a story which could only be titled Hellfire and Holocaust. Huge nimbus of fire emanating from the extended hand of Vulcan up into the sky, separating Green Lantern on the right, Dr. Fate on the left, as they are hovering above him. Vulcan stationed on a rooftop in New York City somewhere. So a fight ensues. For a while, several pages here at the beginning of this issue, Green Lantern takes Vulcan on by himself. I'm not sure why it was by himself. These were, the layouts were by Keith Giffen. I, for whatever reason, Keith wanted to just use the one hero here. So Green Lantern is going up against Vulcan and uses a reflector, and it reflects Vulcan's attack, but it reflects it into a nearby building, which is just turned into rubble. The rubble starts falling to the ground below, threatening unknowing citizens, so Green Lantern has to break off and go rescue them. As he's down on the street level, on the ground, finishing up that quick little rescue, Vulcan emits another massive eruption of energy, this spewing from him multiple tendrils of red-hot fire energy, but it becomes white-hot molten lava, if you will, 2, 4, 6 individual streams heading down towards the street, again endangering the passerbys down below. Green Lantern again uses his ring to form a protective shield that intercepts these white hot beams and something. We don't really know what happens to them. I guess they disappear, really, because Vulcan is again attacked by an unknown force, which we would think has to be Dr. Fate, as he hasn't really participated yet. On the splash page to open the book, he was there, but this is the third story page, and he's finally appearing. Vulcan attempts to immolate him with energy from his hands, but Dr. Fate raises a pretty cool-looking shield. It's a band of yellow with Ankhs represented within that circle, kind of like the numbers on a clock face. And then everything, and then there's a yellow circle in the middle, a small circle. Everything else is clear. So the effect is kind of a transparent shield that just is ringed with yellow, has 2, 4, 6, 8 Ankhs arranged, again, like I say, like digits on a clock face, and then this circle in the middle, the rest is clear. So he uses that to intercept the energy that Vulcan is firing, and the two are increasing the energy outputs of their two constructs until finally they explode in this energy effect that completely destroys the building they're on and several surrounding buildings. Unfortunately, Green Lantern is off to the side, having rescued some of the citizens of the city in a green dome half bubble that he's using to transport them away from the center of this fighting. So he's not anywhere in range when these several buildings are destroyed by primarily by Vulcan, probably. That's what he wanted. But it's an after effect of the increasing energy of attack of Vulcan and defense from Dr. Fate. Dr. Fate nowhere to be seen as Vulcan now jets out of the rubble and away, leaving Green Lantern there to start searching to try to find his compatriot. As he's flying across the city, he's now over Penn Central Freight Yards, we're told. Pike, I was going to call him Pike, which is his name, but Vulcan, encounters something coming from the sky that intercepts him, like some other kind of energy that intercepts him and throws him for a loop. But we don't get to find out exactly what happens because we cut to Carter Hall, archaeologist known to us as Hawkman, as he is speaking with a friend of his at a museum where he's at. Carter currently is trying to find remnants of the lost city of Lemuria, and he has something in his possession here. It appears to be a clothed, armored creature of some sort. It's made to look like it is grimacing, purplish togs adorned with various jewelries, bands around his arm, bands around the upper thigh, completely clothed. He does have this massive wrestling weight belt type thing that becomes a gigantic cod piece it's very, very adorned in the midriff, lower groin area, this creature. High collar unto Dr. Fate at this time from Marvel Comics, with a necklace that appears to be made up of perhaps bones of some other creature that is not clearly detailed. So it has been found suspended in a block of amber. Now think of how much amber that would take to surround a creature probably roughly the same size as Carter Hall and his compatriot here. Completely in amber, much above and below it as well. So it's completely ensconced in this amber block. And as they're talking, we see that there is some kind of something eating through into out of the amber near this one of this creature's hands. So apparently it must be conscious to some extent, and it is trying to exact its escape from its current prison of amber. That was interlude one. Interlude two, we go back to Vulcan now as he has been struck from the sky by some sort of energy that's knocked him for a loop. He plummets into the train yard, destroying tracks and several trains, and is sitting here in his cascading nimbus of energy, checking himself out, trying to figure out what it is that befell him that knocked him out of the sky. To his surprise, he did not see anything. We saw the energy, the something strike him. I'm not even sure that he saw to know what it was. He says, something weakened me, something drained my power, but what and how? So now he's, you know, checking himself out, giving himself the one once over to make sure that he is still okay. We cut back to the brownstone now, where the Flash, Power Girl, Star Spangled Kid, and Wildcat are here as the local fire departments are attempting to put out the fire. Star Spangled says that he could have done it with his energy rod, but that he wasn't allowed to, that they, I guess, being Flash and Wildcat, being the olders of this group, wanted the fire department to do something. In the midst of their talking back and forth, so this is the second, apparently, of the ongoing struggles, although struggles isn't the right word, the friction of our group. We have Power Girl versus everybody else, because everybody else is male and she's female. And then we have Star Spangled Kid, Power Girl, and actually he hasn't shown up again, Robin, as the newbies versus all of the old Justice Society members, Hawkman, Dr. Midnight, Dr. Fate, Green Lantern, Wildcat, Flash. So that is the other friction. Now, Robin, we haven't seen for a couple issues. It's mainly Star Spangled and Power Girl representing the new blood, and everyone else in the story so far, the old blood. So those are a couple of our major conflicts, besides the fact, of course, that Justice Society is good and they're going to be fighting bad guys. So a lot of conflicts here. Also, interesting, we have several storylines coming together in this book. We have the ongoing Vulcan. Now we have this Lemuria dude that Carter Hall has. In the midst of the old guard versus new guard conversation, we see somebody running out of the crowd throngs towards our heroes, and it turns out to be Joan Garrick, who is the Flash's as Jay Garrick, that's his RL, his real life persona. They're married. He's married. I don't know if at this point if they have children. You'd have to check and see. Those of you that are bigger DC and particularly Flash buffs, fill me in if they have any kids yet. But Garrick is married. She's worried about him because of what probably she saw on the news. She rushes over. The brownstone is completely engulfed. She's worried about her husband. So she and Jay hug here, and they have a little discussion where she beseeches him to come home. Now, we saw last issue, which I don't think I mentioned, in his gloomies that the Flash was feeling, and it's stopped raining now. Most of this action that we've been seeing outside has been not in the rain, but to start the story off last issue, it was raining, and Flash was bemoaning or was pining about the lack of action and how he got left on monitor duty in essence and couldn't do anything else. You know, he couldn't find something to do because he had to stay here until something came up to do as he was on monitor duty. Well, Joan has beseeched him to come home, and he told Wildcat that he was going to go home with his wife, and apparently he kicked off and went home with his wife, leaving now Star Spangled, Power Girl, and Wildcat here at the scene of the burning brownstone. Arriving now are Hawkman and Dr. Midnight, as Star Spangled Kid says he notified them as soon as their battle with Vulcan was over what was going on. So they're coming to see what they can do to help. As soon as Hawkman and Dr. Midnight arrive and get the lay of the land, what's going on, everyone through the power rod of Star Spangled Kid, which he is kind of surprised this is possible, a message comes through from somewhere else. It is Green Lantern telling everyone that this is an 1-A, the spelled out 1-A priority. Dr. Fate's been injured and Green Lantern needs help. He's in Times Square. So Star-Spangled is surprised that Green Lantern was able to take over his power rod like that. So they all take off to go to Times Square, well, except for Power Girl. She noticed something somewhere else, took off right before the message came through to investigate this something else. So here is another, we'll find out that it's related, but right now as we see it, it's a separate storyline. A large spacecraft has landed in Ridgefield Park slum clearance project. So it's landed in a cleared portion of a neighborhood of buildings that have been condemned and are coming down, being torn down. So she goes to investigate the spaceship and immediately attempts to attack the alien that she sees. The alien repels her attack. Next scene is the, let's see, where are we? Yeah, we're at Central Park. Well, no, this is the centralmost section of Gotham City. So we're in Gotham. So I've been saying that the brownstone is in New York. I apologize. Apparently the brownstone is in Gotham. I thought it was New York. I guess that's later. Okay. Anyways, so the brownstone that is burning, or no, we are not there. Okay. Let me set the scene here because I'm goobering it up pretty good. The JSA, predominantly the JSA members, were at the brownstone in New York. Power Girl goes off. She is still in New York. An emergency call came from Green Lantern, who is looking for Dr. Fate, where they were fighting. They chased after Vulcan and took him. So they're in Gotham now. Green Lantern requested help. The JSA is there. Everyone is looking for Dr. Fate. But with all of the rubble, Green Lantern is having a hard time because he can't affect wood. It's a weakness of his power ring. So he can't move wood. He can't get a hold of it. So clearing the rubble is pretty difficult for him at this point. And Dr. Midnight says, don't worry, I've got infrared glasses and we can look for the heat signature for Dr. Fate. And he does so and says, okay, now dig here at this location and you'll find him. So they find Dr. Fate. Wildcat is upset because Fate is, well, he's going to be unconscious, right? Because he's been buried. They believe him just to be dead. I can tell you, spoiler now, that Dr. Fate lives well beyond this, so he's not really dead. But they're thinking he is. Wildcat, out of frustration, punches a nearby girder. Dr. Midnight is lifting and holding Dr. Fate, who is very limp noodly in his arms as he's laying there. Green Lantern is cursing the gods in the sky here in the background because he was not able to rescue Dr. Fate. Cut back to Power Girl, who is fighting this alien. Not doing too well, but she keeps having difficulty pressing her attack because she keeps getting these images in her mind. Finally, she realizes that the images are this alien dude attempting to speak to her and tell her what he's up to. He doesn't want to fight. He's here to make amends, to correct a wrong. And so in her defeat, right, because the alien is he's not trying to beat her as the good guys would a bad guy, right? He's attempting to hold her off long enough to get his message through to her because he keeps trying to speak to her telepathically, and she's not understanding what she's seeing, and she's shaking it off, and she's pursuing her attack. But this alien is holding her off and continuing to try to get this message to her through her head until he finally does. So now we see that we cut back to Hawkman and Star-Spangled, who have tracked down Vulcan, where he fell after being hit by this mysterious energy, right? He fell into the train yard, and he's been sitting here giving himself the once-over to make sure he's okay after plummeting who knows how far down to the train tracks of the rail yard. Well, they find him, and so Star-Spangled and Hawkman attack. Star-Spangled surrounds Vulcan in ice, which he quickly melts. Hawkman has a pair of, they're kind of like the bolos that you've seen Argentinian cowboys, I believe that's who it was, use. The two weights connected by something, a rope. Hawkman's are connected by a chain because they're two metal balls like you would see on top of a morning star with the spikes. no handle, but they're connected by this chain, and he throws them like one would a bolo, which I don't know if this is a real weapon, but it seems pretty badass to me. So Vulcan is able to melt those as they're incoming, but while he's distracted like that, Star Spangled uses the actual train tracks to try to wrap and tie up Vulcan. Well, he melts those too. In the midst of this, Power Girl arrives with her newfound alien friend in tow and relays that his name is XLK-JNN. I have no idea how you would say that. But he has some knowledge. He gave, essentially, Christopher Pike these powers as he came across him plummeting into the sun. He was nearby and saw this and attempted a rescue by doing what he has done. Come to find out that in the process of creating this monster, he also built in a sensitivity to sunlight that Vulcan has. So apparently that is what was streaming out of the sky. The clouds must have parted during the day, and Vulcan was hit by direct sunlight, and that's what weakened him, causing him to fall into the train yard, which is where this battle is now commencing. So Power Girl relays that first that this alien gave Pike the power, so that's how he knows what's going on. And he gave him a sensitivity, a weakness to sunlight, which he was coming to correct. But before he can do that, Vulcan completely vaporizes the alien. And then Star Spangled Kid decides to drain all of the energy from Vulcan and causes Vulcan to disappear with nothing left but remnants of fire and the battle axe that apparently he created. The final scene of the book is Star Spangled Wildcat, Green Lantern, Power Girl, and Hawkman in a waiting room, and Dr. McKnighter comes out. That is Dr. Midnight's secret identity, right? McKnighter? Yeah. He comes out having tended to Dr. Fate and tells them, "I can't lie, Green Lantern. Dr. Fate is dying. Only a miracle can save him now." So we're told by the narrator that next issue, the fate of Dr. Fate and the mysterious secret of the man monster called Xanadu, Xan-ADU. On sale fourth week in June. So that is what we have to look forward to. So we had multiple storylines introduced, but come to find out one of the introductions was merely a subset of the current storyline. But we still have this alien Vulcan. Well, I guess we'll say that storyline is done because the alien is killed and Vulcan has disappeared. But the remnant is a down and out Dr. Fate, which perhaps we'll see what happens to him next issue, with now the introduction of this Lemurian creature that we saw is at the beginning stages of extracting itself from this big block of amber it was caught in. Lemuria was an island that sank in the ocean, but this denizen of Lemuria is caught in amber. Not sure that. Okay. So now we have that storyline to continue with, as well as where are they going to headquarter? Because their brownstone just became ash, right? So interesting. I'm not sure why I'm noticing, but the introductions of the various storylines really is piquing my interest as we're reading these issues. I kind of like the way that they're being set up. So next issue, All-Star Comics issue number 62, is what we will be looking at. Thanks for joining me, guys. Send me some feedback. I'll talk to you next time. Ciao.